Hey everyone, welcome back to the Product Guys. I am Tim Hu. Today there is no Rob D, but I do have another guest. I'll let that guest introduce himself. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey dude. I'm Chirag Shah. I work in product. And
come on, Chirag, you are like a much bigger deal than that. I'm gonna give my version of the intro because Chirag is out here. He is being coy, he's being modest, but you're on a podcast, man. Feel free to brag a little. So yeah, Chirag, yeah. I've met him. He was actually the godfather of one of my positions. He was actually the guy that kind of started it all. So he laid the product groundwork for us when I joined on. But Chirag is an MBA. You know, he's got coding experience, senior product manager at a pretty big deal startup revolutionizing the renter space. So, Chirag, man, go ahead, flex. Yeah. Flex for the people.
I don't flex too often, but if I was to, I am big on real estate. So I think it's a natural position for me as a product manager working in technology to work at an insurance technology company. So I work at the Rhino right now. It's an interesting place in general. I think we're doing a lot of great things for renters and also landlords and just trying to improve the overall renting experience. So in addition to that, I invest in real estate. So I own a few properties. I am the landlord myself. That's kind of my side hustle. And I write a bit. I do write just general things about like however or whatever I observe. So it's been, yeah, just kind of exploring in general. And that's actually what I love about product. It's just all about discovery and exploration. So
that's right. And it's always good to find another fellow content creator that with just a passion for product management and the disciplines and the skills required to be a good product manager, because you need to have a full toolkit if you want to do well and excel in this product space. So Chirag, man, you said that you like to write. That is the exact opposite of me. I like to talk. So that explains our medium. But tell us a little bit about your process, man. So tell us kind of where you get your knowledge, you know, where you like to level up, how you like to, just where does your inspiration come from?
Yeah, you know, a long time ago, actually almost a decade ago, I got a bit interested in content creation as a vehicle towards financial independence. So I started a site, long time ago. It was called The Art of Acumen, and it was kind of inspired by what I think a lot of content creators know as Farnham Street. So I was working kind of in just like managing or helping knowledge workers get a bit more ahead in their career. So just kind of thinking about like mental models and frameworks.
You know, kind of curious which mental model really helped revolutionize, maybe not quite, but had a huge impact on his kind of content creating capabilities, as well as maybe his product skills as well. So Chirag, you there? It doesn't have to be the one, but if there is a mental model that you're just like, this is a good one. I mean, tell the people, let them know.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I've been writing about a lot, or it just keeps coming back to me, is this concept of like wickedness in the world. And like that sounds like very like cryptic or morbid, but really all it means is like the feedback loops in like each environment are different. And so it's really hard to discern what's good feedback, what's bad feedback, when you're going to get it, how you're going to get it. So ultimately, like, and that's very different than like non-wicked, or I think, I don't know what they call like non-wicked, but it's basically like a standard feedback
like
loop.
Like Dorothy, like Wicked Witch of the West versus Dorothy.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like you're thinking about Dorothy is like a cookie cutter like feedback loop where I'm like, you know where the feedback's coming from. And so you have like attuned yourself to like think or like kind of focus on that attention on those signals. But like in a wicked world, or like most of our world is pretty wicked, by the way. So it's like in other environments, in most environments, it's not as like clear cut as like Dorothy. So like it's very it takes a lot of like attention. And I think what it kind of led me to think about was like being present in a lot of environments. So like trying to use your senses to like best understand all the information that's coming at you, how you can use it to kind of like get that feedback and use that feedback how you want. But yeah, that's one thing that I've been like I keep in some ways, like, and I when I'm writing, I try to like create some scope for myself so I don't like go on like tangents and so forth. But
yeah,
it's always like something that like for some reason props up in all of my content. And I think it's just because like that's how reality is. And I write a lot about how like just like models in reality. And that seems to be like a very common one, or like a very useful one, I'd say. Yeah.
For sure. You know, I think that branding, and I don't know if you came up with kind of wicked feedback, but I think it's got some sizzle. I hate myself for saying this, but it's got some sizzle to it. Like it, I can hear the cringing and the wincing from the audience already in my head. But yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I've not heard feedback described that way, but in product management, it's core, it's fundamental, right? We're all about defining problem. We're all about meeting customer need. And well, how do you know if you're able to do that, right? Gather the feedback, whether the feedback is external customers you're selling to or internal stakeholders and customers, that feedback loop and that ability to kind of collate all that and have that inform what solutions you deliver, I think so important to effectively product manage. I think it's kind of at least interesting to kind of talk about ideas that could influence product, but it kind of, I guess, it's like an unknown, right? There's a book, it's, I can't remember it, but it's, Never Split the Difference. Have you read that book, Chirag? Where it's this former FBI guy, and he just talks about unknown unknowns or black swans, and uncovering those kind of opens up the path to really solutioning and really successfully negotiating. And in this case, kind of the unknown unknown is that terminology where once you hear about it, ooh, now you can go research and learn a little more. So, Chirag, we appreciate you for sharing that with us and letting kind of the listeners dig in a little more on their own and have some of that discoverability on their own.
I came across an interesting tweet by, I think his name, I can't like truly pronounce his name, Shreyas Doshi, who worked at Stripe. I think most people who are listening to this would know him. He had an interesting tweet regarding the fact that like problem solving is really more like problem trading. And so, like, in the process of doing that, it's like to your advantage to kind of work through that framework of like known knowns, unknown unknowns, and everything in between. But what's most important is to like truly understand like the known unknowns and like the unknown unknowns. You can't know the unknown unknowns, but
right.
What I'm like getting, I didn't finish the article, but like what I think I'm getting at is like, when you're doing problem trading, like rather than like problem solving, what you need to think about is like when you're inheriting or like solving a problem and then inheriting a new problem, be aware of like all of the expected like new complexity that you're going to have to manage. Mm. And so, like knowing that, like you'll understand like the impact, the magnitude of it, like the overall like risk it might have to your business or whatever the case. But then also like that's like one thing. That's like one part of it. So like then you can kind of and I can actually walk you through an example of this in my real life in a moment too. But then there's like the unknown unknowns, and like I kind of get, and I thought about this, when you're like when you launch something or you ship something, you tend to forget about like the unknown unknowns because you don't know that they exist. Like, of course, you don't, you, there's right, no
facility. Of course.
So like, I think of it as like, you kind of need to do like, not so much like we all do like outcome tracking and we all do like, just like measuring in general. We don't do enough like reflection about like the very hidden things that have emerged, kind of those unknown unknowns as you've like shipped something. So like what's happened in some way that you can like hopefully glean by reflecting. But yeah, I mean, it goes back to like problem solving and problem trading, because it's like whenever you're solving a problem, you have that time to think about these unknown or known unknowns and unknown unknowns. So it's kind of like, why not do it?
We'll from now on go unknown squared or the black swan situation. Yeah. just call it black swan. But yeah, you know, I think that's really interesting that you kind of introduced that mental model. But I guess my personality is pretty literal, right? I like to get into the tactics and talk about the specifics. How does one even do this reflecting? So you just shipped something. You want to maybe discover some known unknowns, or maybe you want to discover some black swans. Maybe I'm using that terminology completely incorrectly. But how do you, what are the tactics? Like, what tools do you deploy?
So I shipped this thing recently that, and what's funny, and I kind of wrote this article, I started thinking about this, when like someone asked me a question or like made this statement in this meeting about like, oh, like I heard you ship this thing and it didn't go that well. And my response was like, what are you talking about? Like, you're talking about like the specific release, it went really well. We're learning now. Like, it's kind of like a lot of people, specifically in business, like who are not in product, like engineers or product managers or designers, say you're like a stakeholder, right? Like, they expect when something is shipped, it's like the problem's solved. But in reality, it's never really solved. It's like you've kind of just kind of displaced the problem. So we ship this thing. It's very complicated. It's kind of like, no, I don't want to get into it, but we shipped this thing, and I knew that there was going to be this situation wherein I work in InsurTech. We work with like landlords and renters. Renters like buy this thing that like requires partners to approve certain things about what they bought, and very ambiguous way of putting it. I know it, but. I don't want, like, it's kind of hard to describe.
We won't have you pitch to any investors.
Yeah, don't have me pitch. I don't pitch. But
the ships.
Yeah, exactly. So we shipped this thing that required some partner approval, whatever. There's going to be some like backlash from partners. So I devised this protocol hypothetically if certain situations would happen. And it was a very loose and light protocol. And what that gave me was like the room to ship while acknowledging that this was going to occur. And like immediately the thing occurred. And fortunately I had a plan. Like I had a almost like a mitigation plan, let's say. And I, within like a few days, worked very cross-functionally, very quickly to get that plan in motion. And so we can begin executing on it so that both renters and partners were happy. And now that plan, but in that same process, like I learned like, okay, well, why am I having to trigger that mitigation plan? And it was because like we had some unknown unknown, which was like this one feature was being actually abused in a way. And so we realized like, oh shit, like, the reason this thing is happening, this like known unknown, or like this kind of this known unknown, let's say it's kind of in this, it's whatever known, it's because of this like unknown unknown that we had no idea would have occurred.
Right.
But like by looking at like, honestly, by looking at like full story, you can see like, oh shit, renters are abusing this thing, and that's causing this thing. And so like we solved it. And then that plan, that mitigation plan, was just completely unnecessary because, like, we didn't need it because we solved, like, the core problem, which was, like, in the unknown unknowns realm. So, I don't know. It was interesting. It was an interesting experience to, like, go through that and, like, uncover something. I learned a lot in this I learned a lot in that release, honestly. Wow. Yeah.
That's very interesting, but it almost sounds like what you deployed was like, was it data analytics? Did you go look at the data and just break out kind of user behavior some way and say, hey, this type of behavior, this metric is so high.
Yeah, we definitely did that. We had like, we basically had all these like disposition reasons or like why, like, the feature is stupid. Basically, it allows a renter to cancel their Rhino policy. Okay. But like in the process of canceling, the renter needs partner approval because we're covering the partner from like renter damages. So but the renter has to submit a reason. And so there was like five discrete reasons and then one reason for other. Mm-hmm. And we saw in our data that like 50% of cancellation reasons were other.
Of course.
And we were like, what the hell is going on? And we like dug deeper and deeper. There was two things. Like one feature on like one part of our thing was just honestly broken. So we fixed that. Another part was that like one of our workflows was so like hidden. Again, it was kind of like it related to like a cancellation mental model.
Right.
That like instead of like selecting like yes, I'm doing something and like that triggers a cancellation, they're going to the cancellation workflow. And that was leading to all these problems as well. So we uncovered all of that by just like tracking the disposition reasons and
interesting.
It was kind of like what?
And like discovered a brand new use case or just a brand new path that your users were taking that you just like had no idea. Another pro tip, knowing your data in product management is probably pretty important. And if you don't know data, at least talk to the customers and get that qualitative insight because, man, it's like you can ask them and then you're going to have to prove it with the data because they're probably not going to tell you. So the customers won't. So that was really, really interesting how you kind of discovered that unknown unknown. And I feel like for the rest of this podcast, we must ban that word.
Yeah, terrible word. I don't know. Like, so what's funny is like that framework. I'm gonna stop talking about this in a second.
But yeah, keep going.
That framework was devised by or like from a quote. I don't know if you know this, but from Donald Rumsfeld talking about. He was like,
I did not know that.
Yeah, he was like talking. Basically, in a lot of words, he was just talking about like his known knowns and unknown unknowns, and was like, "We're gonna go into this war, and you know, like, it's gonna be a lot of unknown unknowns, but we're gonna go into it." And unbeknownst to him, like the biggest unknown was this scenario that we're kind of facing now. Not to get into like politics, but he had no idea. But I think like the biggest. That's why I go back to like reflection, right? So it's like, if like he said that and he knew that, like, okay, well, there's a bunch of unknown unknowns. Why not like try to dig a little bit and determine like what those are so you can resolve them and bring them to the surface? That's like the biggest thing is like, and we talked about this at the beginning, like exploring and discovering, like when you release something, sure, you can like measure your metrics, whatever. You got to dig deeper below the surface to find those unknowns that like either are opportunities or they could be problems that you can solve. So he kind of screwed up because he like the war started like 20 years ago and he never reflected on it.
Right.
But it also takes a lot of like humility to do this because like it's like, oh shit, like maybe I didn't do a good job or like these unknown unknowns are actually much bigger than like the problem I actually solve. So it's kind of like, oh shit. But you got to be so honest.
Interesting. So. All right. So we're going to fact check. And I just did, sorry, Chirag, but I'm going to fact check you. Donald Rumsfeld did make it famous, but if you believe Wikipedia, right? If your Wikipedia is your source of truth,
I do believe Wikipedia.
All right. Well, then you're going to believe that this unknown idea was actually created in 1955, of course, by two American psychologists, Joseph Luft, I sure hope I said the name right, and then Harrington Ingram, two old psychologists talking about psychology. That's also where it's the wicked and kind learning environment. I've also found an article.
Yeah. Good.
I'm a fact checker. My Google Foo is on 10, and 10 is the highest score, not 100. So yeah, we try to be on the up and up here. But that's so interesting. I actually specifically appreciate Never Split the Difference, the author's Chris Voss. First of all, whenever you pitch that you've worked in the FBI, you did hostage negotiation, I'm hooked. I'm in. I want to listen to the rest of the story. So yeah. Chris Voss talks about unknown unknowns, and I think I liked his strategy, and I actually continued to deploy it routinely, regularly, right? At home, at work. And that's asking these open-ended questions and just listen. Not only just listen, but get awkward. Be very awkward. Literally listen. And then when they stop talking, continue to listen, give it 30 seconds. And sure enough, you're going to, I think that's when the magic moments happen where they reveal some information about themselves. Really, really listening, just being patient, responding instead of reacting, I think will really help drive that point home and really will surface some of this information that honestly may be the most valuable, right? It's whatever they say after the 30-second pause. Get really awkward with it. That has changed my life and my ability to conduct discovery, which means honestly just listening and looking for the problem in product management. So that's that was my spiel. So maybe Chirag will give you that, and you know, you can do a little research on that and put that on a interesting article, collab on that, see what comes out of that detail there. So
yeah. No, but you said something interesting regarding like being really awkward. I think it like that in and of itself is kind of like a heuristic or something to adopt, because that's like, to your point, like in we just went through like a round of interviews, and I found like a correlation between like me feeling awkward and the interviewee feeling awkward and like high level of like insight. It's like the weirder you like the question, like the deeper you can get, like I asked a question, like I just use like that like 5-why framework. I kind of go like 3-4 and like that's good enough. By the time you're on your third why, you're probably super awkward. So like I actually think that's kind of like I think it's like a super skill in a way. But it's also something to like just like keep in mind, like how awkward can I, and not like awkward in a way like asking strange questions, but like asking like on topic like penetrating questions in a way. But
right yeah, it feels very, I mean, don't be creepy, right? But some of these things that product managers do, they are not super normal, I guess. It's just I don't know how to describe it. You can be a really cool person and be a really good product manager, but when it comes to gathering information, it's just like you may have to challenge some social norms. Just pausing for 30 seconds. Try pausing for 30 seconds in a conversation and you will see what we're talking about. It's so weird. And then your audience may yell at you. If it's your wife, they will definitely be like, "What are you doing? Stop it right now." Or they'll talk and then they'll totally feel heard, and then everything is perfect and happy wife, happy life. Am I right?
You're right.
That's totally right. So anyway, that's awesome, man. So I'm really you know what? I need to go back and reread all your articles because I know I see them posted once in a while and I go through them, but I think it's time to revisit. So where do you get your inspirations to kind of level up your product skills, level up your kind of writing and mental models? Where do you gather kind of, what's your secret? Where's your well of wisdom?
Well, is it so, like, are you asking specifically about, like, content or product or
why not both? Go into all of it. Yeah. Whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah, I mean, I think within the product realm, in terms of, like, inspiration, I don't know. There's just a lot of great thought leaders out there that make – and I've experienced this myself, too, like – I think I get daily inspiration from a lot of the impact that I have or that we have on, like, mm-hmm. the business and the customer. That's just, like, self-generated in a way. Like, that's what kind of is the fuel that, like, is renewable, let's say. Right. But outside of myself, I think there's just a lot of, like, great personalities. Like, I mentioned, like, that dude Treyas on Twitter, mm-hmm. And, like, he has a lot of other stuff, too. Like, I'm sure I haven't, like, dug even that deep. I like how I kind of think these two people think similarly. But there's the Basecamp guys. And they were, like, so what was interesting is they wrote a book, I think a year or two ago, called, I think it's called Ship It or something. I don't even know what it's called, but. Look it up. I know you're. I can hear you typing over there.
I'm Googling nonstop.
Yeah, they wrote a free book about, like, shipping value, and, like, they kind of work in six-week increments. They, like, allow, like, the product manager to kind of focus on the problem, generally the solution, but then they let, like, the experts, like the designers and engineers, like the brains, like, really think about, like, how to craft something within a 6-week time box. And, like, that's really inspired me to, like, create value really quickly. But I mean, aside from that, like, there's, like, the normal guys, like, I don't know. I like John Cutler a lot. I've been reading some of his stuff recently. There's just a lot of people out there that, like, definitely inspire me to do a lot. But I think ultimately what it boils down to is, like, creating value through, like, technology, of course, is, like, philosophically what it is. Well, my pizza's ready, so I'm gonna get that. I'm trying to keep my phone on while we're talking too.
That's cool.
I think I've told you this before, like, our job is to, like, determine what's valuable to people, like, what helps them, what solves their problems. And then, like, leverage technology, like, leverage whatever we can and whomever we can work with to, like, help that person solve that problem, whomever your customer is. Like, I think it's really gratifying to do that because otherwise, like, they might have solved their problem in some inefficient way. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like, us all working on various products that, like, help people through various things, like, collectively improves their lives, even though, like, we're doing it disparately, like, across different organizations. So right. It's like just, like, the power of technology. Like, I mean, and, like, you can see more and more people, like, gravitating towards, like, operating a lot of their lives in their digital, like, in a digital way. So I don't know, that's kind of that. But, like, content stuff, there's a lot of folks, like, I recently was most inspired by a dude. His name is Dave Perel. He has, like, a really interesting story because, like, he's been writing for, like, a decade. He started off, like, pretty bad. His mom, I think, was his, like, editor for, like, whatever, how long. But, like, just through, like, sheer persistence and, again, getting that feedback from, like, the world, he's been able to, like, become a really, like, renowned writer. And actually all he writes about is, like, not all, but, like, a lot of what he writes about is, like, helping other writers, like, get past, like, that initial hump of, like, developing a habit. So I've been inspired by him recently. There's a dude, his name is Julian Shapiro. I read a little mini guide by him. But again, this goes back to like what I started with, was like creating value. Like they're creating products, which are really, they're creating content products that help people like solve their own problems. And so like, and they're doing it in such unique ways. Like I come across like playbooks, I come across like manuals, like online, like cohort courses. Like there's so many ways of like disseminating information to become a better person. That's so interesting. And like, and honestly, like it's, you can monetize it. So it's great. Like, I mean, there's like a win-win. It's like, you can pursue your curiosity while also like possibly
bettering the world.
Yeah, like better, like there's so many, it's like such a win-win for everybody. And right. And I'm not like a greedy guy. Like I'm not doing this so I can make like $1 billion. If I want to do that, I might have like started like a tech software company. But like like I'm just
work doing... at them. You don't want to start it.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, that's also the benefit of like being a product manager. You can like get all of like the thrills in a lot of ways of like being a CEO without all of like the risk. So
right.
I don't know. It's kind of, it's like hard to say like what inspires me. I think it's like building like value ultimately. So
right. Yeah. I will say that kind of providing value to users, customers, solving, first of all, solving a problem in itself, when you solve it, that's amazing. Like that feeling is so gratifying. Just like, all right, I got this problem and I solved it. And then I specifically solved it for this person or these people.
Right,
and
right,
when,
right.
And when they just kind of have that aha moment where it's like, oh, this is amazing. I was putting up with all this. And now look, I don't have to do this at all. I love
right.
it. You know,
right, right.
You know, I, that is 100% why we do what we do. So, I was inspired today. I have a bunch of new folks, new thought leaders to kind of follow and go through. So, hey, it was great having you on. Chirag, you want to send us off with any parting words of wisdom before we wrap this sucker up?
I'd say the only thing is just to like persist through all the bullshit. Because like there's a lot of it. Like I think like as PMs, like you have to deal with a lot of bullshit, whether it be like in your org, whether it be like tech debt or design debt or like just colleagues, like whatever the case might be, like I think we have to focus on, again, just getting to value. And to do that, like you got to kind of like rise above all the bullshit.
And I am 100% going to make an episode out of that theme and idea. 100%.
Yeah, just rise above it, man. It sucks. Because like, yeah, I mean, so much of like the job is so like hard, but it's fine. It's great. Like, I mean, I wouldn't want to do anything else right now, at least. Maybe in the future I want to do other things, but right now I'm
right. Good with it. Yeah. I don't think I know or have any energy to do anything else. This is everything for me. Maybe not yeah. everything, but it's amazing. It, this, you know, the work is great, and no one knows how to do it really, not yet anyway. So. Hey, Chirag, you want to let the people know how to find you on the internet?
Yeah, yeah, sure. You could find me at chiragshah.io. That's my site. I post once a week. It's very obscure, and I don't mind the obscurity as I kind of find my own voice. You can find me on LinkedIn. There's a bunch of Chirag Shahs. I am Chirag Shah 3, if you want to... finagle the URL there. And yeah, I have a Twitter at Chigamus. It's from a long time ago. But yeah, definitely reach out if you have anything. But
well, we'll link to Chirag's stuff in the description. I don't think anyone ever opens up the podcast descriptions and look, but we will put that info down there. I'm pretty sure
nobody cares about the guests.
No, it's not about that. It's that like in any podcast platform, they bury the description. It's impossible to get to it. So yeah. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to get folks to discover you.
Hey, that might be a problem we're solving.
We're going to solve it by, I have no idea. We'll make our own podcast platform. It's not crowded enough yet.
Yeah.
We'll post a bit.ly or something. So anyway, Chirag, thank you so much for joining, and I'll catch you next time. Yeah, this is Product Guys. Talk to you next time. Bye.